strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Now, this wasn't a setup with this rejoiner song. Luke Lipinski's joining me. Do you even have any idea what this song is?
Is this Heart?
Yes. Yeah. Crazy on You.
Oh.
So
the rejoin said, like, I have to have, like, smart, informed opinions and stuff. That was not told to me before I walked in here.
Luke Lipinski joins us from the Luke and Wolf show, or Wolf and Luke show. Have you guys fought over the name? Who gets first billing yet?
Wolf gets the first.
Of course, yeah, he does. Let's talk a little bit about sports. I want to start with the Cardinals, but then I want to move, because you're such a hockey guy. I talked to Shane Doan yesterday. I love Shane. So
great guy.
We'll get to that in a minute. But he actually invited me to come watch a game with him.
You should do it.
Are you kidding?
If you've never watched a hockey game with Shane Doan, it's an experience, yes. Well,
and that's the thing, is that who in the world gets to watch a hockey game with Shane Doan?
Apparently Mike Broomhead.
I don't think he meant it, but he said it.
I don't know. Doaner always means it. If he says something, he means it usually.
Let's start with the Cardinals. Big shift today with a trade for a tight end, and not just a tight end, but a really good tight end.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You watch the start of the season, Max Williams, who they had in there, was just kind of like, hey, this guy can block, and he's a good blocker, and that's great. But as a fan, as a casual fan, you maybe don't notice, hey, great blocking tight end. He became such an important safety outlet for Kyler Murray in the first five games that I think they were kind of forced to look around and say, we have to replace him now that he's here. We have to get somebody who can catch.
I was at the game when he got injured, and I'm on the home side of the field. You could see it when it happened. I mean, that's how...
Yeah.
That's how bad that injury looked. But they got a tight end. They're going into Cleveland, not just dinged up, but the COVID stuff and everything else, playing against a really good team. Even though Cleveland's 3-2, Cleveland has been in those games and could have won. They could be 5-0.
Yeah.
So this is a very good football team. What's the outlook, you know, for the Cardinals?
The injuries make it really cloudy because Cleveland, like you said, could be 5-0. The two losses were to the Chargers and Chiefs, who are two pretty good teams. They like to win with their running backs. They have two really good running backs, Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. They're both hurt. The Cardinals have a bunch of guys hurt on the defensive side of the football. So it's really, you would almost go into this game, Cleveland's favored. I don't understand that. If you just set aside the injuries, you'd almost go in and say Cleveland wants to run, the Cardinals want to pass, but that may not be as easy for either team with all the injuries.
Well, Kyler Murray's got an injury to his throwing arm.
Yeah.
So that means they're going to be a lot, I'm just guessing, that they're not going to be worried about the deep ball as much.
Yeah, that's where this gets tough, because the way to beat Cleveland is to throw on them early, which the Cardinals should be able to do, build a lead and take them out of their running game. But you're right, with the busted, and look, he threw the game-winning touchdown with that injury, so I don't know quite how bad it is, but everybody looks at last season, they're like, well, when he was hurt last year, the Cardinals were terrible. So you're right, there's probably some hesitancy there, but that kind of plays into Cleveland's hands.
And the defense for the Cardinals, much improved this year. They've been playing very, very well. The one thing that where I've watched from a casual observer, I mean, as a high school football coach, the young linebackers are showing their youth in a way. They just seem to be a half a step behind sometimes. And with great running backs, that's all you need is a half a step. And they're all the way into the secondary. So I don't know how much that plays a role. But if they can step up, maybe they can fill that gap with those injuries to Cleveland.
Yeah, Isaiah Simmons has been a lot better in year two. But Zaven Collins, it's only fair. He looks like a rookie at times.
I don't know. I was talking with Vinny about this, but I don't know if you guys have talked about it on the show. Week home opener for the Cardinals against the Vikings, and then a division rival in the San Francisco 49ers, and it was almost a 50-50 crowd. I'm a season ticket holder, and I wasn't angry at the Vikings game. I was shocked. I thought, man, who gives up their game one seats, the home opener?
Yeah.
But a division rival and a hated team with an undefeated home team, and you're a 50-50 crowd.
Yeah, especially after fans really couldn't go to the games last year, and the Cardinals are the only undefeated team in football. You know,
and it's not a fluke. They're a good team.
Yeah. No, they're legit. It's a fine line to walk, right? Because I don't want to come on here and be like, you got to spend your money this way. But I think the trade-off is you can't then complain that people say, oh, Arizona's kind of a transplant town with the fans are kind of all over the place. Just if that's the way it has to be, that's the way it has to be, and that's fine.
I understand, because the big thing with the Cardinals when they were at Sun Devil Stadium for all those years was they don't put a winner on the field. Mm-hmm. They don't pay their first-round draft picks. They don't have a big coaching staff. They don't have a depth chart, and they don't win games, so why would anybody go? And they said, if you build us a stadium, we'll will get you a winner. And they did it. This is a fun team to watch. They are year in and year out. And Kyler Murray is electric. If this doesn't get butts in seats, I don't know what does.
I think the combination of winning, and like you said, the Cardinals are probably the most entertaining team in football to watch. I do think we're going to see the crowds get more back to really where they were even pre-pandemic. It was mostly Cardinals fans at those home games. There's always going to be some transplants because it's Phoenix and there's a lot of people from out of town. But I think it'll get better.
All right, so they got Cleveland this week. Mm-hmm. Then next week it's Houston. Now, Houston's not going to travel well.
Mm-mm.
So you're going to see a lot of Cardinal fans.
I'm surprised their team travels at this point.
But then it's Thursday night football against Green Bay.
Yeah.
If that stadium on a Thursday night is green and yellow on national television and the only game that's on, that's an embarrassment. I'm sorry. That's an embarrassment with a team as good as the Cardinals.
And nobody travels better than Packers fans.
No.
And it's very obvious when they are all wearing green in your red stadium. So, yeah, that's a real concern, I would think.
Yeah,
for the
because
team.
You could see it on television with the 49ers and the red kind of blended in. It was a little different sometimes, but it blended in. That's not going to blend in. When Kyler Murray can't get the crowd to be quiet, if that happens, it's going to be an embarrassment. To me, that's embarrassing.
We'll have to say it's just pre-decorating for Christmas with the red and green.
Right. Yeah. That's what it'll be. So, but do you guys, is that something you guys discuss? What is, you know, you and Wolf, because Wolf being such a big Cardinals guy, that's got to be tough for players. It's not demoralizing, but it's got to really be bad to go into your stadium undefeated and look around and not see the support of the community.
Yeah, I think surprising, like you said earlier, was probably the best word so far. And I want to see if it changes now over the course of the season as people realize, hey, it's the only undefeated team, and maybe they have an MVP at quarterback. But especially the Minnesota game, that was a little surprising.
So let me ask you real quickly about the Coyotes. I talked to Shane Doan. He says he's got a team of young players. They're going to play very hard this year. They got blown out last night in the season opener. Now, they've been playing pretty good in preseason, but we all know preseason's the same in every league.
Yeah.
What do you make of this team?
I think they're doing it the right way now, finally, where they have a plan where they're going to try and not just get into the playoffs in a year or two, but like once they're there, be legit competitors and contenders. And Bill Armstrong, the GM, was part of the build in St. Louis a few years ago that resulted in the Stanley Cup. So I think it is a legitimate rebuild. They have a ton of picks in this upcoming draft, which is one of the best drafts in the last 20 years. But you're also going to have nights like you had last night.
Do you think that part of the rebuild mentality is this year realizing that they're not going to be in this building much longer and that they're building toward having a big team and a chance and a big push in a new building?
I think they coincide. I don't think that was necessarily intentional. I think Bill Armstrong got in here, about a year ago, and it was right in the middle of all the pandemic stuff, so he couldn't really put his fingerprints on the team. This is how he likes to rebuild, is through the draft.
And if you're right about that, I think that's nobody will remember the bad years. If you think Jimmy Johnson came in to coach the Cowboys and dismantled that entire team and they were terrible, nobody remembers that. They remember the Troy Aikman, they remember Deion Sanders, they remember those guys winning Super Bowls. They don't remember the bad years that got him there once you get there, but you got to get there.
Yeah, you don't, being in the middle, that's kind of the worst ultimately, right? Like you want to, if you have to bottom out a little bit to ultimately get great, that's the way to, you just don't want to go through life even in like a mediocre position, and that's where the Coyotes didn't want to be.
So when you because you covered hockey for so long, for my own, because I want to know, who you picking this year? Who's going to the Stanley Cup?
It would feel stupid to not pick Tampa. They've won the last two. I really like Colorado. I thought they would go deeper last year. Now they have a goalie. They have Darcy Kuemper, the former Coyote. So Colorado's dangerous. Those are two of the most dangerous teams.
Yep. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming in, as
always.
Always,
man. Always.
And I look forward to talking to you again. And congratulations. I'm glad you're doing the show with Wolf now. You sound great.
Cool.
A lot of people don't know that you and I used to do weekends together.
Yeah, I used to run the board for you when I first did this. Yeah.
When I was doing weekends, I didn't know what I was doing. You didn't know what you were doing.
No, I did not.
We still don't. We got better jobs.
But nobody realizes it.
Nobody realizes it. Thanks, Luke. I appreciate
that.
Luke Lipinski. Coming up in a moment, we are going to further our discussion in a moment. We're going to talk about student test scores across the country falling for the very first time in a very long time. That's coming up.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks so much for being here. Coming up in just a few minutes, we are going to speak with a former Salt River Fire Department employee, a firefighter, who lost his job because he's not vaccinated. And so we're going to talk about kind of the fallout of vaccine mandates and what we think. You know, these are the people, in my opinion, we talk about first responders. This is Police Week, and we honor the fallen police officers across the country. There's also a time we honor the fallen firefighters and people that are all first responders and the hard work they do. We're going to talk with one of those people now that are losing their jobs because they're not complying with mandates. We're going to get to that coming up. I want to talk about student test scores falling. Student test scores fall for the first time in national test history. Math and reading test scores for the country's 13-year-olds have dropped sharply in comparison to the numbers from 2012, as some of the lowest test scores, as test takers fell the furthest behind. So we look at this. The U.S. News and World Report said that this is the first major score drop in the subjects since the National Assessment of Education Progress began tracking long-term academic achievement in the 1970s. So it showed that while the 2020 average scores in reading and math for 13-year-olds marked an improvement from the National Assessment of Progress and their earliest results. So we're looking at a drop in test scores. I want to talk about this for a moment. I understand and agree that we need to, as a society, there are a few things that our government should be doing. And number one is public safety, that they're responsible for public safety. If we are going to be a nation of laws, if we are going to ask Americans, we're going to ask people in Arizona to call the police, let the police handle it, let the court system work, don't get revenge, don't be a vigilante. If we are going to do that, then we must have an agency or agencies that step up and arrest criminals and convict criminals and put criminals away and separate them from society. And we also have to educate. We have education rules. Now, I still believe that that ultimately is the responsibility of the parents to make sure their children are educated. But we hire teachers. We have an education system. We also have a healthcare system. What's fallen off? You look at what's happening, and we're seeing police agencies now saying we're seeing an increase in crime because they've lost so many police officers. But during COVID-19, during the COVID-19 pandemic, is it the pandemic that's caused these things to happen? And the answer, it isn't. The COVID-19 pandemic, police officers and firefighters across Arizona saw a spike in COVID-19 cases. We have had reports of law enforcement and first responders dying from COVID-19. We know that healthcare workers were working long hours and they were working relentless schedules in order to keep up with COVID-19 patients. Why is it acceptable to have the fallout the way we have in education? Why is it acceptable that the educator unions across the country are fighting every step of the way, fighting opening schools the way they did? And they did it across the country. The AFT, the American Federation of Teachers, were leading the teacher organizations in Arizona around by the nose. And I know this for a fact. And one of the reasons we've invited many of the members of the AEA or the AEU, they're the teacher organizations in Arizona, they have an open invitation to come on this show. They won't come on the show. I guess I don't blame them because I want to ask them some questions and get them on the record with answers. But when you are going on national video conference calls, on Zoom calls, many of those Zoom calls I've been given copies of, and you are planning your next protest, when you are planning your walkouts, when you are planning, we're gonna videotape our eulogies, because we're going to die. If you send us into the classroom, we're going to die. So we're going to videotape our eulogies and send them to the governor. When you are actively doing those things, were they doing that in the police department? Were they doing that in the fire department? What they did was double down and did their jobs in spite of it. They worked around a spike in cases, with a labor shortage, just like we see in schools. There is a shortage of teachers. There is an immense shortage of police officers. There is a shortage of firefighters, and they faced COVID in a different way teachers ever will, which is they are in scenarios sometimes where they can't choose to mask up or glove up or be in a situation where they are perfectly safe because they're dealing sometimes with a very sick and critically ill, or they're dealing with a criminal that wants to fight. And teachers fought every step of the way getting back into the classroom. And we have been warning that we are going to see a fall off in education. You've got the youngest among us. So now what you're doing, you're looking at, especially in the elementary school. Now, 13-year-olds are not elementary school, but elementary school kids. When that first few years of school, kindergarten through third grade, where you're learning the basics, you're learning to read so that you can read to learn for the rest of your life. When we've disrupted their schooling for two of those years, what's the fallout going to be in 5 years? What's the fallout going to be in 7 years? When these kids become high school kids, when these kids graduate from high school, or if they graduate from high school and they move on, then what happens? And this is a problem that we should have been facing a long time ago. Now, I'm not solely blaming teachers' unions for this, but what I'm saying is the American public expected all calls for service from the fire department and the police department to be answered. It did. We didn't want to hear about COVID-19. And to be honest, neither did the firefighters or neither did the cops. They went and they did their jobs. Why are we listening to the because what we're going to hear now, funding problem, we need counselors, we need remedial this, we need that. Why shouldn't we have the same expectation of results from something that is equally important? Wouldn't you say that those would be the top three? Fire department, police department, teachers. Well, you can't have two out of the three accountable and one not. And we're sacrificing a lot. We are sacrificing a lot by watching this happen. Coming up in a moment, we are going to talk with a firefighter who left the Salt River Fire Department because he didn't get vaccinated. So the real fallout of vaccine mandates, we'll talk about that in a moment. Hey, thanks so much for being here. We've been talking about vaccines. As most of you know, if you listen to the show, I end up saying it every single day. I am fully vaccinated. I did my homework, decided it was right for me at my age. I'm not that young anymore. I'm 54 years old. I'm in good shape for 54, but I'm not a spring chicken. So I also do a lot of events in the public. So I thought for me, the right thing to do was to get vaccinated. But the idea of forcibly vaccinating someone, taking their job away from them because they are not complying with this, didn't make sense to me. And the real fallout of this has a lot to do with first responders that are walking away, hospital workers, firefighters, police officers that are finding out if they don't comply with a vaccine mandate that they are going to lose their jobs. Well, that is happening. And there is a former firefighter with the Salt River Fire Department, Daniel Schulke, who joins us now. Daniel, can you explain what happened with you when the mandate came down, when you decided not to get the vaccine and what happened?
Yeah, I mean, I always had my questions about the vaccine when it first even started coming out, and, you know, did a lot of praying about it and decided that it was in my best interest to just hold out for now and wait to get the vaccine. The vaccine mandate was issued on August 20th, and we were given till the end of September, so September 30th, to comply with either submitting a medical exemption for the vaccine or to receive the vaccine. They didn't give us any option for any religious exemption. So our only option was either the medical exemption or the receiving the vaccine by the end of September.
How many of the public safety employees do you know? Do you have a rough number of idea of how many office police officers and firefighters are going to be leaving the agencies?
So I heard a roundabout number for the police officers was about 30 that left the Salt River Police Department. We had four firefighters that were terminated for not receiving the vaccine. We did have around the 20 mark of firefighters that, you know, did submit medical exemptions, but most of those were denied. I believe they only accepted four. A lot of the firefighters did decide to get the vaccine, which is completely their choice, and there's nothing wrong with them deciding to do that. The problem is just being forced to take the vaccine. And if you don't take the vaccine, you lose your job for it.
So how were you notified, or when were you notified, and what happened with you leaving the job?
So I was trying to ask some questions about my medical exemption being denied. I wasn't able to find out any answers, and I didn't get any responses to my email, or they didn't answer any of my phone calls or return them. So I initially had been denied on, I believe it was around September 26th. So I was trying to, you know, I was in a time crunch to find answers. So they wouldn't respond. And so on the 30th, I was notified that I would be terminated, but I was able to work my shift through the end of, so I got off in the morning on October 1st at 8 in the morning.
How difficult was it to walk away from that job?
Extremely difficult. I mean, I started trying to get hired out at Salt River when I was 18 years old, spent 3 years trying to get hired. I worked there for 16 and a half years. So that you add that up, that's 19 and a half years. I'm 38. So I basically spent half my life out there. So, I mean, it was an incredibly difficult decision to walk away from a place where I dedicated my life to and you know, dedicated my life to serving the community and the community members out there, as well as, you know, the toll it takes on your family life because you're away from your family a lot of the time as well. So, I mean, it was very emotional to go through that, to have to decide between my job and my beliefs. And so, yeah, I mean, it was extremely difficult to do something like that.
And the agencies are not that large out there compared to other cities. So there's got to be lifelong, almost family members and friends that you've made, not just inside the firehouse, but also in the community.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, with all the calls we run, you get to know a lot of the community members and you see them out at like public events and everything. So you get to know, I mean, it's a pretty small community, so you get to know a lot of people out there. And, you know, my heart goes out to the firefighters that are still there because with the four of us leaving, there's a lot of staffing issues that go along with that. And so, I mean, they have to take on extra burden and maybe work extra shifts that they weren't planning to that way, that because what they do is they call it mandatory holdover. And if we have short staff, they'll hold someone on a extra day to make sure that the trucks are staffed. So, I mean, it's very taxing for the whole organization as a whole, because it not only affects us, the ones that were terminated, but it has lasting effects for the firefighters that are still there.
Daniel Schulke is joining me. He is a Salt River firefighter who was fired because he did not get the mask or the vaccine, and it was mandated in the Salt River community. Have you been offered a job anywhere else? Have you been searching? Have you been offered anything anywhere here in the state?
I've been searching around. There's been offers to apply for positions, but as far as like just moving right into another position, there hasn't been anything. I haven't heard anything like that. So right now, just looking to see what testing processes are open and, you know, submit a new job application and try to get a job with another city.
Daniel, I appreciate you coming on and talking about this. I can hear in your voice it's a difficult thing for you to endure, and I'm sorry that you had to go through this. And I hope you update us on how you're doing as you move forward.
Yeah, I will. And I appreciate you giving me the time to come on and share everything with you. It means a lot.
All right. Thanks. That is Daniel Schulke. He is a former Salt River Fire Department employee. He's 38 years old, as he said, spent half of his life serving that community. Out, fired because he didn't get a vaccine. That's the real life. That is the real life fallout of what's happening right now. And these are real human beings, community servants. Said he spent 3 years trying to become a firefighter. 3 years working out there and trying to get hired on. And then it spent literally half of his life serving that community and out because he wouldn't get a vaccine. So these are the real life repercussions of these decisions that have been made. Coming up in a moment, we are going to speak with Sheriff Paul Penzone regarding the MCSO Police Week and honoring a fallen deputy in that barbecue and how you can help. All that's coming up here in just a couple of moments.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks so much for being here. It's the Mike Broomhead Show. And we want to talk about, we got to get to this. Maricopa County Sheriff's Office is honoring a fallen deputy today and having a barbecue. We want to get an update on the family. We want to get an update on the sheriff's office. So joining us now is the sheriff of Maricopa County, Paul Penzone. Sheriff, welcome back. How are things going with the agency? How are things going with the family of Deputy Ruiz?
I think we're working through it. You know, it still has challenges, and I know the family is still in this state where it's just, it's devastating for them. But I would say the organization is doing what we do best, and that is understanding, I think I told you before, you know, we may be hurting, but we're not going to be broken. We're going to support the family, and that's why we're so proud to know that we have a couple of partners to help us out with this barbecue today to raise some money to, the dollars don't replace his life, but it goes a long way to just show the love, the care, support, and the willingness to sacrifice in a way to help the family during a difficult time.
I know you've attended far too many of these, and I have as well, with Phoenix PD sometimes, but with the sheriff's office or any agency, the outpouring of support from other fellow law enforcement officers and first responders, but the community turning out, the family really does feel that connection.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, you know, Mike, it's very somber, but for those who want to go and understand and get a feel for what it likes to be in a law enforcement family, these barbecues are a mix of the two. It is, as I said, you feel the pain of the loss, but you feel this, this family energy. You feel part of something bigger than self, and you have a great appreciation when you just sit down and have a hamburger with, a police officer, a deputy, whoever's attending, because there will be a lot of agencies there representing support for, Deputy Ruiz. But for anybody, it's not hard to get to, sit down, have a hamburger with somebody, get to know them as people and understand what it's like when we go through this, because you will feel the energy at its somber moment, but also at its appreciation for the relationship or the fraternity that is law enforcement.
Where is this happening?
It's right in front of our headquarters. We actually shut the street down. It's 550 West Jackson. And I'm thankful to, the PPSLA, the Phoenix Police Sergeants and Lieutenants Association is one of our partners. Ugly Pools and ASCOPS have all contributed, all chipped in to help us pull this off today. All the money, all the proceeds will go directly to the Ruiz family. And there's something really significant. In front of our headquarters, there's a statue of a horse. And he represents, it is the horseless, the riderless horses. It's a representation of the fallen,
right,
who have sacrificed in the law. So it's a memorial and it's a significant space. So it's a great place to go visit.
And if people don't have time during the day, they can just drive by and they can drive through and make a donation if they want to do it that way.
Yeah, if you can't hang out there, that's not a problem. You can just come by and make a contribution, or you can go on to the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office Memorial Fund and you can make a donation online. But I would tell you, if you have the chance, because, a lot of folks get to the funeral, but not everybody can attend. If you have a chance, just go out there and say thank you to a few people in uniform and let them know that you appreciate their work and that you're with them during this difficult time and the loss of Deputy Ruiz.
It is not lost on me that this is Police Week, and this is the week where Washington, D.C. honors fallen officers, deputies, troopers from across the country. And there is also somebody from Maricopa County being honored there this week.
There is. As a matter of fact, I am literally sitting about 100 yards away from the Washington Memorial right now. We had a candlelight vigil last night where Officer Jim Lee, his name was Jim, but he went by Jim Lee, who died in the line of duty a little over a year and a half ago with the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office. When he was assaulted by an inmate, he is being recognized. So we'll have events. His family's here with us also. We have quite a few representatives from the office. So we're here just to pay tribute to him. And I'll tell you what, it's been 2 years because of COVID since they've had this event. And Mike, if you're out there like we were last night, where they literally go state by state in alphabetical order and just say the names of every single officer, deputy who was killed in the line of duty. And it's just too many. It's too many lives lost. And it's not just officers. I know it's violent crime in general, but it's a significant event. And I'm just honored to be here to be with the family and to represent the sheriff's office.
Well, Sheriff, I appreciate you coming on today. I know that it's a crazy time there for you, but I appreciate the update. I'm going to try to get out there myself today to say thank you to some people. And I appreciate the update on this. And hopefully it's a big turnout and the family can kind of feel that embrace.
No, I appreciate what you do for law enforcement every day, Mike. We know that, you question things that need to be questioned, but you're always there to support us. You understand the challenges, and you're an extension of the law enforcement family. So thank you for all that you're doing. And to everybody out there, thank you for the outpouring of support for his family in many different ways. And the silent majority right now is not being so silent. They're being heard, and we appreciate it.
Thank you, Sheriff. Appreciate that very much. That is Sheriff Paul Penzone, Maricopa County Sheriff, and he is in D.C. for Police Week. The barbecue today, 550 West Jackson, which you can't miss it. You know, it's such an easy thing to do, to be able to go out and just, you know, drop some money in a bucket. But he's right. If you've never attended one of these, the family atmosphere from the law enforcement community, to see law enforcement officers represented there from literally all over the state and sometimes other states that come to these events just to lend their support. And these are people that are volunteering their time to cook, and all of the money that's raised will go to the Reese family. And for the family to see the number of people that recognize the service is something that they will always remember. So please, if you're able today during your lunch hour, it's going on, I believe, until 6 p.m. if you want to do it after work. It really is a great event and something that we all can do to help the spirits of this family. So I'm going to try to get out there myself today for a little while, and I hope you can do it as well. I consider it a privilege to be able to go out and to be able to give a little bit of money to the family. It's not the money as much as it is what it represents and the thank you that everybody says, what can I do? There's going to be short-term and long-term needs for this family, and the last thing they should have to worry about is an expense. Let them grieve, and this is how we can help them grieve and show them that we're grieving with them. So not to get too dramatic about it, but these events are as beautiful as they are sad, and I hope that you're able to get out and do that today with the sheriff's office. Coming up just after 10 o'clock, we're going to talk about the vaccines because there is an update as far as boosters go. Moderna, Johnson & Johnson, and an update on Joe Rogan and Sanjay Gupta because this is not over. Gupta went back on CNN. Did he say what he said he would say? Did he ask for an apology? We'll talk about that in a moment.